with Edgy Witch Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the East Eddy Ranch, otherwise known as Paranormal and UFO Central. We've got a great show tonight. There's a lot of things on the agenda in the news, but we have such an awesome guest tonight. I'm really going to skip a lot of that because the information is so incredible, and it's going to take us the whole hour to really get into this. So hopefully we can hold back on a little call till maybe the last 20 minutes or so of the show. We're bringing on Neil Freer tonight, and he's the author of Breaking the God Spell and God Games, What Do You Do Forever? It's his new book. And he's got just all kinds of papers, white papers he's written, Sapien Rising, Beyond the Babel Factor, Exponential Evolution, a manual for futons. What's a futon? We'll have to get into the alien question. A few other. I can go on and on, but you can go to his website. It's www.neilfreer.com. It's NEILFREER.com, and go ahead and check into all that. Before I get too far into this, Neil, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you, James. It's a pleasure, and it's good to hear your voice again. You know, we haven't been in direct contact, I think, since I was up your place.
Yeah, at the Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference. But we had some pretty crazy events here at the last one. We had a massive ship come over, and it pulsed everybody in the field, about 350
people. Really?
One guy said he got it on film and he never sent it to me, but everybody just dropped their jaw and didn't do anything, unfortunately. But we've got some incredible new footage, and which kind of ties into your work as well, considering you're one of the leading authorities on the Anunnaki and the ancient history and the true origins of humanity.
I would defer to Zechariah Sitchin, I think, when it comes to the Anunnaki.
Yeah. Well, what is your main focus? I was reading your bio, and funny, it sounds very similar to mine because I had the same childhood experiences and experiences with extremely advanced beings and on and on where they download you with a lot of information, and I guess you're bringing all that out now, and according to your bio it said that wouldn't come out till you're around 70.
And I'm 78.
Yeah.
78 going on 58. Uh-huh. And in passing, I might mention that I've been ingesting monatomic gold, you know, the extraordinary white powder single uh-huh. atom form of gold now for over a year. And I can highly recommend it. And it's probably one of the reasons why I am 78 going on 58. I think that's a really great place to start, James, because as you pointed out, I do speak of childhood alien experiences. But what I think is even more interesting is the contrast that kind of explains my situation, the contrast between your experiences and mine. You had them with, as you say, very highly advanced beings. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that my experience at 6 years old, being picked up and tweaked, sitting in a very rural situation back in the Hudson Valley. The men folks had just finished dinner and came out to sit on the porch of the June evening to do man talk while the women did the dishes. And at 6 years old, I was sitting at the end of the row learning how to do man talk. And everything just sort of quit right there in space. Everything was frozen in space-time, and there was that electric feeling around it, and I was supposed to walk out into the dark, and I did, and I don't remember anything until I ended up walking back on the porch, and everything started up again. And that was really a far-out experience, but I took it for granted that's the way the world was.
Yeah.
And it turned out that the somebody looked at their watch, and they said, well, gosh, we just got out here, it was 7:30, and it's already 10:30 or 11, and what's going on? You know, but it was at 12 years old when I was picked up in the middle of the night in a waking experience, and I asked these little gray guys that picked me up, what are you, who are you, when they wanted me to wake up, and they said, well, the chief at my head, the bigger one, the sergeant, he said, we're androids, giving me to believe that they were, you know, a combination of human and android and robot. And so it turned out they were Anunnaki androids. Mm-hmm. The word Anunnaki or Anaki was used at that particular point. I spoke to my parents about it. They did as with you. They stuffed this huge ball of information in my head that I couldn't understand. They said, well, it's for you when you're going to be later, you know, much later on, and we would like you to help us get reintroduced into the planet. And and they showed me a quick clip of who their management was, and it was a very tall, husky dude with big grizzled beard and everything, looking very much like the Anunnaki that I finally saw in 1976, that Zechariah had pictures of from all of the ancient cylinder seals. And I'm sorry to take so much time here, but what's really has always struck me is that my experiences with the aliens were with specifically Anunnaki, and it's a very thin slice of the whole picture, whereas yours, your contact has been with highly advanced beings, and the Anunnaki are, you know, they may be thousands of years ahead of us, but they don't equivocate to, you know, some of the totally almost mind-boggling advancement of some of the other species that have been here.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, your main focus has been on the Anunnaki. We talked earlier a little bit about that, and it seems, you know, I've done a lot of research in this area too, and it seems like they are the main ones that you know, we have recorded in history that we can actually nail down, and we have a written record that they were here, and you know, we're involved with our civilization you know, I said in its very beginnings, you might say.
Yeah, I think I've found it convenient to distinguish between intra-solar system exopolitics, contact with our species and a species, in this particular case, the Anunnaki, who are from the 10th planet in our solar system. Their home planet, given in detail in the ancient records, as opposed to, well, not opposed, but as contrasted to the kind of extra solar system alien civilizations and species that we pretty obviously have been in contact or have been here or observing us for perhaps millions of years.
Uh-huh.
And people say, well, what about the Anunnaki? Well, you know, if all of the evidence from the ancient records is true, substantially, they invented us, but genetically engineered us by crossing Homo erectus genes with their genes, and that's why we don't match up with the Darwinian sequences and periodicity of evolution, where it took, as an example, it took Homo erectus a million years to go from rough flake stone tools to smooth flake stone tools, whereas in 200,000 years, we have gone from square one, getting invented literally in a laboratory, as slave animals, as a slave species for the Anunnaki doing their gold mining. In 200,000 years, we will be going to Mars soon, or probably have already been to Mars. if we can believe some of the, you know, people like Ben Rich or Phil Corso and those people. So I'm very interested in contact with any alien species. I think that, as you say, my focus has been in that area for a long time, and it shows up most in the most recent book that I published just within the last 3 weeks. I published it on Kindle through Amazon.com. Kindle is the new electronic book reader, which is a really nice piece of machinery.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the, as you mentioned, Sapiens Rising, the View from 2100. I put it out as a white paper first and then as a full book. And so the focus is on the exopolitics of it. And the biggest picture that I can see at this particular point corresponds, I think, very, very closely with your paradigms. But it's that we're being invited to stellar society. It's as simple as that. We've been observed, we've been contacted, and we've also been given the rules for matriculating into stellar society. We have to go as a unified, peaceful species, no weapons in space, in order to meet those rules and get accepted, we have to do two things, I think. It's very clear. In order to get to unity and peace, we have to restore our true history to ourselves, learn who we are as generic human beings, and then we can get past the "my God is better than your God," and if you don't really believe that, I might have to kill you. The kind of thing that is at basis of most of the major conflicts that we see on the planet now, because we don't even agree on a definition of what a human being is. Some people are bound by the idea that we're static creatures that are affected and flawed by original sin or its equivalent, and we can't evolve, and that we're totally dependent on some being or other to somehow or other save us. Whereas on the other hand, we have the evolutionists who say that, we follow the patterns of Darwinian evolution. And I think that it's quite clear by this time, with all the information that we have about our history and our nature, that both the creationists and the Darwinian evolutionists are both half right and half wrong. That there was a creation, but it was in a genetic engineering laboratory. The evolutionists, yes, there is pretty obviously a natural evolutionary process up to the point of us, but we don't fill that bill. We're a synthetic species, and so there is evolution, but in our case, there's a special case of it going on now once we were synthetically invented. So once we can get past both of those and see that there is a comprehensive new paradigm that restores our true history and our true nature to ourselves, allows us to see the trajectory of evolution that we can choose and can control and be on as a unified species, that's going to help a lot. The other part of it is that we need to get past the illusion, the primitive illusion of competition for limited resources. And I think that is best done by listening to people like Bucky Fuller a long time ago with the ideas that he had. But now we have three technologies that I think are really key in getting to a point where we can get past communism, socialism, even the form of democracy that we have now, and even get past money to a point where we go from competition for limited resources to a planetary level of cooperation. And that sounds like, at first, it sounds like, you know, I'm really blowing smoke here, mm-hmm. because of people say, well, human nature is never going to get there. You know, we'll slaughter each other first. But when people realize that if we can get disclosure of the alien presence, and it may well be coming now, I noticed that CNN is going to have a morning series for 5 or 6 days running on the UFO situation, the alien situation. And there's all kinds of indicators out there. Maybe it's time. Maybe Obama will see the light. I've already sent him a copy. Him and Michelle, I've sent a copy of the new book, Sapiens Rising, you know, for what it's worth. So if we can get disclosure, then, as Paul Hallier pointed out, we will be able to get them to disclose the high technologies that we know that they have and are suppressing. And if we combine free energy, where there's a non-polluting source of energy locally from this, anything from your wristwatch to a spacecraft, and combine that with nanotechnology, the end product of which is that we will be able, in mature, intelligent, consciously controlled nanotechnology, be able to transform anything on the molecular level to anything else. And so recycling, in the sense that we know it now, is totally canceled, because it will be an integral part of the process. And if we use artificial intelligence, developed, again, consciously and intelligently, with the entire species in mind, we'll be able to use that to do the logistics to utilize free energy and nanotechnology until we even get something better than that. But we can provide, I think, for an almost unlimited population until, hell, they start to fall off the edge of the earth. You know, we can actually provide and get past the competition of where there's winners and losers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of focus I have right now, and I'd really like to talk to people, especially like you, because, you know, you're headed in that same direction. But I also like to talk to people around the world about it. People say, well, the ordinary person has no concept. That's nonsense. I don't think I know what the ordinary person really is, because when you get to know people down deep, and you know, and you see that they're ready for this. You know, I think the populations are totally ready for this.
Yeah, I think down deep there really aren't any ordinary people.
No, exactly.
You know, when they're around their friends, they're ordinary. But you know, when you get them one on one, I mean, I get people coming up here from every walk of life.
Yes.
You know, we have triple PhD Boeing engineers coming up here to, you know, to see what's going on and you know, learn about these beings coming in and out. And,
sure.
And we have your average Joe, you know, coming out here with their family.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, putting out a picnic lunch and sitting out and waiting, you know, waiting for the evening show. So it's quite interesting. I'm seeing, you know, the bottom line in the heart of hearts of all humanity. We all want to live in harmony with each other. We want universal peace. You know, we want to provide for our families and live an abundant life. You know, some just want to simplify, and you can live abundantly through simplification.
Sure.
And I really think that the problem is when you keep moving up the ladder, the higher you go up the ladder of power, where people have given their power away to institutions and agencies and whatever, it just gets kind of darker and darker, and the people get more separate from the rest of the people, and pretty soon, you know, you've got these egomaniacs running things. And I think the common people, are very good in their heart, and they really do all want the same thing. It's just a matter of that coming forward and getting the leadership to wake up and smell the coffee and stop.
Sure.
Stop doing the separation game.
Well, I think you probably see it the same way. If we look at the what seems like to be the final victory of the dark side, the devolved, power-playing, so-called elite. You can take it as well. God, they finally have not only beaten the casino house, in casino capitalism, but they bought it,
mm-hmm.
or taken it over by fraudulent election or whatever.
Yeah.
And they finally have triumphed. Whereas I see it just the opposite. I see it as having run out the games and the power grab and the competition. Winners and losers game to the just about past the end of it. I think we're looking at the end of the string, and I think so-called financial crisis power or money grab, with the $770 billion bailout, so to speak. Aha. Uh-huh. And so I think we're seeing the end of the line for this stage of our so-called evolutionary process.
I feel the exact same way. I've told people, I said, this needed to happen. It has to, the beast has to consume itself. All the prophecies talk about this, these end times. They all talk about, and I have a lot of friends within certain systems and things, and they just said, the bottom line, the beast is too fat to fly, and it's just wallowing in its own greed and everything else, and it's just gonna probably die of indigestion,
when I look at the I don't watch TV normally. I it's meant for the smart 10-year-old, and it's manipulative, and it's the other day, I was walking by the TV, and I caught part of the so-called testimony. I'm not going to mention any names, but it was when they were up there in front of Congress trying to explain why they needed $770 billion bailout. And I looked at the face of the gentleman who was the point man for him, and It his expression clearly alternated between, like, just about utter fear. Oh my God, the game is over. We're going to squeeze every last penny out of this, even if we have to take off like the Bush family, I suspect, may do for their 111,000-acre private country that he bought in Paraguay.
Uh-huh.
But when he got opposition from the Congress, it was almost a snarl.
I mean,
it was like, don't you guys are not supposed to do this. You're just supposed to do what I say.
I saw that too. I saw, and I've seen that in some other people too. At the top, that they get these snarls and looks on their, like, how dare you even question me?
Right.
And you go, oh my God, these people have lost so, they're so out of touch.
Yeah.
With the people, there's no service there whatsoever.
No.
They're totally self-serving, and to the point of where they've taken it to the limit, where it's there for everybody to see, and I really think that's their role. I mean, their role is just to take this, to make it so in your face and so obvious that eventually the people go, you know what, we're done.
Forget it.
Yeah, we're going to do something else. This just is not, what I signed up for.
Yeah. Well, even to the point, I mean, I have a video clip someplace here of one of the congressmen who is making a statement actually on the floor of Congress, I believe, and maybe you've seen it. And he was saying that when they were trying to decide on the bailout or not, the administration called them and said, you know, if you guys don't do this, we're just going to declare martial law.
Yeah.
And I understand that some of them were actually physically intimidated, threatened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's getting pretty far out. Well,
yeah. Yeah, where has it gone? I mean, it seems like it has to go. You know, I've gotten some really good news lately from some of my connections on high. And they said that everything has changed. And before, where they had a lot of non-interference policy and pretty much staying unseen and doing their work.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like it's all going to come out of the closet here real soon, and they're going to become very active. And right after they gave me this message, I'm getting calls from all over Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Florida, even here in Portland, Oregon. We've got jets constantly strafing our house, chasing something. You know, it's been real cloudy, so we haven't been able to see what's going on up there.
Yeah.
But it just seems like it is breaking loose right now, and there are ships appearing everywhere. And so, to me, it's the real disclosure is going to come from the sky, you know, from the heavens or from the sea.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I think they're getting ready to do it. And what they told me is that people are going to look up, and they're going to be in awe at first, and then there's a part of them that's going to go, they've lied to us all this time.
Uh-huh.
And they said that's going to create, and they said that the only threat that we pose is, they said, the threat isn't coming from heaven. The real threat is already here. It's been here for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
And they're here to take away a lot of the manipulative things that are going on here that have stopped us from evolving. So there's something going on. I don't have all the details, but it's really big, and it's unfolding right now. And these are definitely exciting times, because I'm getting reports from everywhere.
I've had the privilege and pleasure of meeting Phil Kropp.
Mm-hmm.
And he was interviewed by Bob Dean on one of the hour videotapes that Bob started to do, UFO Insiders stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interviewed too. And so I've been in contact with him after I read his books. You know, here's a desk editor, 30-year desk editor, skeptic, from the LA Times. Very smart guy, very articulate, but totally skeptical. And then he gets sucked up for a whole weekend seminar by an advanced species he calls the Verdants, and they say that they have 800 people already contacted and set up in high places. So that they're not going to do it when the, you know, a thing like the Bush administration is in the way. But it's very similar to what you're talking about here. You know, the gradual manifestation, and they say, you know, that we'd like to build overnight. We could build this beautiful green place in a bare area of maybe New Mexico or someplace like that. And an interface colony. And I've wondered many times, James, whether that group is known to you, or whether there is correspondence between, or whether there's communication between that group and the groups that you know. It's puzzling to me when I listen to channelers, for instance. People say, well, we're consulting with this channeler down in Albuquerque or up here and there, and they get conflicting messages, as if some of these alien species have no knowledge of the other ones. And that bothers me, because I think there's legitimate ones. With the ones that are for real, that there should be a common knowledge and community out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tell you what's really interesting with me is that there's quite a few groups that I've contacted or had contact with.
Uh-huh.
And some of them, I don't even know who they are. I mean, some don't. They're bipedal, you know, but I've seen felines that are bipedal. They're humanoid felines. I've seen beings that are blue skin.
Uh-huh.
I just saw a blue skin one the other night. I've seen these elfin ones.
Okay.
And I've seen so many different, you know, humanoid type beings and different beings. What I find is that most of them are getting along. There's a couple outcasts that are causing some problems here
uh-huh.
on Earth and have been in the past, but that's being turned around right now by the more benevolent ones. But they seem to all get along, and they have pretty much similar intent, but different needs. Some of them are coming here, have certain needs, and they're taking care of those needs. But the greater majority of them are totally service-oriented. They've evolved to a level of consciousness where they've shifted into full service because they've transcended all material need and lack for nothing, and they're very loving and exquisitely beautiful, and you just fall in love with them as soon as you meet them just because
yeah.
of their frequency and their energy.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the beings that I work with mainly, but I have experienced some of these other ones, and I have had some experiences with one of the gray groups that wasn't positive.
I see.
And we had kind of a little bit of face-off. Now, I don't know if that was because of me, or it was reacting to me, or what, but when I saw this being, and I didn't feel that loving frequency, I just said, not here, not now.
Yeah, okay.
This isn't going to happen, and who knows, I may have offended it or whatever, but I just said, this is not where I'm going, and that was the end of that connection.
Well, you know, I think that's something really valuable for people to hear and learn. It reminds me of, I'm trying to remember, I think it was the MUFON conference up in Michigan, someplace up there, where they invited me up to speak. And in interacting with so many people up there, I met this woman, I suppose she was probably 30, 35, very sensitive, quite intelligent housewife. She was not employed outside the house, but she had some kids and stuff. She was a contactee, a multiple contactee, but it was a very frightening experience for her. And she said that it got to the point where it was happening so frequently, and the way they were treating her was, very disconcerting, and to the point where her husband came home and found her sitting on the couch with a couple of big kitchen knives in her hand, just frightened out of her wits and thinking she was going to have to defend herself. And it's purely my own subjective judgment, but I thought that from what she was telling me and her body language and everything else, that she was definitely being contacted. And
yeah.
And I said to her, the experiences of many people who have been contacted by species, especially by androids, you know, it is ironic, I think, that way back in Roswell, if Phil Corso was correct, some of the persons that they recovered, or one person that they recovered, or the ones that came out of the craft, Phil Corso said that when he saw the autopsy reports, they finally realized that they were androids. And what's really ironic is that the ordinary military human who encountered these beings were didn't even realize that they were androids. I mean, they can be so advanced, and there's probably android species out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that bears on what I'm trying to put out in Sapiens Rising, in the chapter that deals with artificial intelligence, because we are, in effect, about to create gradually what could well become an independent species, you know. And it goes back to the point that you were making about how many different species that are obviously here that you've been in contact yourself with. The difference between a feline and, a Nordic or whatever seems so radical that they seem really strange to us, but I think it helps us understand why they may have different reactions to us and we have different reactions to them. The critical thing, I think, is when, and I would like to see if you agree with this, I think the key thing is that on any given planet where organisms following the general trajectory of evolution towards greater and greater self-awareness reach a point, I mean, Coco the gorilla is self-aware in the sense that she can say, you know, me find gorilla. But a cat, for instance, walks up to a mirror, sees itself in the mirror, but doesn't recognize itself at all, and walks around maybe the back of the mirror to see if there's a cat there or something. We have a level of self-awareness where we distinguish ourselves from all the other animals and creatures on this planet by recognizing that we're aware, that we are aware, that we are aware, and so on. And I think that's the kind of the break point. But if the adaptation to the elements and the conditions on any given planet produce reptilians, reptiles, creatures that are best adapted there, like perhaps it started on this planet, and they develop far enough to get to be really self-aware as we are, for instance, then you get this thing that looks like a reptile, but it's self-aware, and yet its emotional reactions are not going to be like an anthropoid. They're going to be like a reptile. So when we encounter them, as some people say they have, Jim Sparks, for instance. It's a great story where Jim says, you know, I just pushed him far enough where I demanded to see, because he knew that they were kind of cloaking their real physical presence and appearance. And he pushed them, and finally said I ended up standing in the middle of a ring of them outside in the rain, but the rain wasn't falling on the ring or on them or me. And he said, they finally said, well, you know, this is not going to be good, but if you really insist, we'll show you what we really look like. And they scared the living hell out of them. And yet, they were, you know, an advanced species in the sense that they could space travel, they apparently had, you know, some real understanding of us, except that when they were giving him lessons, they were using androids. And I think it's ironic sometimes that they think that their androids can handle us.
Yeah, you know, we are, you know, a very fearful, aggressive species, I always say the consciousness in which you seek is the consciousness in which you connect, and so if you come at them with fear and aggression and anger and everything else, they may react to it.
Yes.
If you come at them with a different way of being, where you're standing in your own self-authority, and you're saying, this is my life, this is my divine right to free will and self-determination, so let's talk as equals here, not out of fear, and just say, who are you and why are you here? We might get a heck of a lot more information, and you know, especially too, if we just stop shooting at them.
Yeah.
And you know, just say, hey, well, let's sit down and find out why you're here.
Yeah, you like coffee?
Let's pull out, you know, a cup of coffee or whatever else you drink, and sit down and crack a bottle of wine or whatever. And let's sit down and talk and find out who you are, why you're here, and how we might be able to serve each other and get along and cooperate.
Yeah, That's what I told that young woman who was obviously, you know, going through psychological hell because of fear.
Uh-huh.
I said, look, if they're any kind of advanced androids or humans or whatever they are, they should have reached a point where they at least respect, okay? And I said, next time, you know, you get into a situation like that, just put your foot down. Tell them, look, I want credentials, I want identification, I want to know what your agenda is, and I want you to treat me like a human, fully, as an individual, and respect me, or else you can take a damn hike for yourselves.
Yeah.
And she looked at me like, you know, and maybe that's, you know, I hope that maybe she did that the next time.
You know, what I've seen with my own experiences is that having had my own near-death experience and crossing over and dying and then coming back, losing that fear of death really allows you to have these contacts without attachment. And so when things are happening, I go, this is interesting, you know. And I don't get into that reactionary mind or that fear mode or whatever else. I just observe and I watch. And I maintain my own self-authority, but at the same time, I'm scanning that presence or that energy. And I've learned to develop my own inner sensitivity, my own inner knowingness, and I can feel the essence of a being or their intention or anything else, and I can decide from there what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, until we do that and get into that space where you just have that loving detachment and you're maintaining that frequency, we are going to have a lot of these problems. And what I heard, two things I heard. One was, believe it or not, they said, you know, the most powerful force in the universe is love. It's the cosmic glue, the manifesting force beyond all creation. And they said humans have the capability of channeling God's love through them as a force and a frequency, and nothing really stands in front of that.
Yeah.
But we're like these little, you know, what do you call them, AAA batteries, you know, running right now because we haven't plugged into that source.
Yeah.
And we're not allowing that energy to flow through us, and so we don't see ourselves as divine, you know, as gods and goddesses, you might say, if I might be so bold. We see ourselves as victims and servants and, you know, subservient to everything that appears around us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I have two heroes. One is the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah.
And the other one is Stephen Wright, the philosopher. Stephen Wright has said some of those profound things like, you know, if you're too open-minded, your brains can fall out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a little discernment is in order.
Yes.
And I really do think that they should honor, you know, not trespass on free will. But some of these beings, like you're saying, don't have the same culture that we do. You might say they don't. It's almost like if you go to Italy, and this is a different example, and hopefully I don't offend Italians, but I know women have gone, I haven't been to Italy, but they went over there and they said guys were just grabbing their ass and doing things like that, and it was just like normal. It was just what they do over there. And well, you'd find that very offensive here, but that culture is a little different.
Yeah.
And each culture has little idiosyncrasies, and you know, they may not have emotions. They may not even know they're causing fear or trauma. They don't even know what fear and trauma is. They're
precisely
beyond that.
Precisely. They you know, if for instance, you know, they say, you know, dogs have masters, cats have staff,
mm-hmm.
and so a feline being, you know, if we project catness on a feline advanced android, we probably instinctively would expect that they will have some of the feline characteristics, you know, as far as sizing you up and reacting to your emotional reactions as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating subject, and that's one of the reasons why I'm a practicing immortal, signed up for cryogenic suspension, and I'm just going to stay around. This whole birth canal, going to school and ending up with a second-rate pair of parents. I don't need that.
You don't want to do it over again in diapers, huh?
No.
My good friend Michal Ledwith talked a lot about that.
Uh-huh.
That coming back in diapers, you know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. But, how with that?
You know, I think about the same thing, too. I just said, boy, you know, the work I went through and what I went through to get where I am right now,
uh-huh.
to have to start over again in diapers with a whole new personality and like you're saying, a whole different environment and parents and everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, if I do that, they're going to be off-world. They're not going to be on the planet. That's where I'm focusing, so...
Yeah, I can see. I mean, and people say, "Well, you're going to mess up your karma, man. That you know, you don't, you know, reincarnation is real." Well, sure, I can see how, you know, reincarnation is real. But on the other hand, I feel that I have enough human freedom and dignity to stay around to see how real it is. You know, I think that we've been so intimidated and conditioned by the fear of God type of religion, you know, the Old Testament type of thing, that being taught that we have to be saved, you know, we haven't got any real choice or control, that. Oh, we just need to realize that it's better to go the other direction, like you're pointing out. You know,
I'm seeing the program here, and unfortunately, it goes back to the information they've given me ties right into the Anunnaki and some other beings that came here even afterwards, and it goes back into the days of the Bible. And if you look at the days of the Bible, and you know. One certain group, you know, they're playing favorites, and a very advanced being came in and took one group, and he marched that group on everybody. You can imagine, and even the land of milk and honey, where they all got along, you know, fabulously in peace and were prosperous and everything. They wiped everybody out. You can imagine. And when you read the event there, you know, they talk about shattering weapons, you know, and things that, you know, against, you know, they're probably using lasers and sonic weapons and things of that nature against people with bows and spears and shields, basically. So,
well, I think that there is a total continuity. I mean, the Anunnaki 200,000 years ago invented us purposely as a slave species, and their two leaders, Enki and Enlil, who eventually turned out to be, you know, when the Levite priests were in captivity and wanted to get out of captivity in Babylon and had all those advanced libraries available to them from the Sumerian, the Hittite, and the Babylonian and stuff, they rewrote the actual and accurate histories that we had been taught by the Anunnaki. By the time they got up to doing Sumer as a crash course in civilization, knowing that they were going to phase off, and that's where the bloodline came from. I mean, if Sir Lawrence Gardner is correct, and I'm sure that with unique access to the private archives of 30 royal families, where he discovered that he could trace the bloodline all the way of kings, special kings, all the way back to Sumer, they not only set up Sumer as a crash course in civilization, but they also, it is clear that Enki, who was the chief scientist that did the genetic engineering that created us in the first place, he has also rewritten in the Old Testament, selected a human female, choice human female, fathered a child by her, in order to initiate this line of foremen first, and then kings afterwards to take their place. The one that he fathered, this boy that he fathered, his name was Cain. From which comes Cain, kinship, kingship. And in this case, as Gardner has pointed out, it doesn't say in the original Hebrew that Cain slew his brother Abel. It says Cain was superior to Abel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have right then the manipulation of some humans to be servants of the people, and that tradition of that bloodline has come all the way up through Egypt and the Essenes and the line of kings and David, and through Jesus and Mary being married and having kids, and it still exists up in the Royal Scots and is diluted through the population. But the idea that the Anunnaki came in here and took over the human species, I don't think that's if Sitchin is correct, it's the other way around. They landed here, colonized the planet 432,000 years ago, and then decided to create a slave species and keep us that way. Enlil, the two brothers who ended up to be Jehovah Yahweh, and his brother Enki, who was Adonai the Lord, squeezed together by the Levite priest in the Old Testament into one single word, Elohim, which is plural, and so on, so on, so on.
Mm-hmm.
They were fused together, the one God of the Judeo-Christian tradition. But they control us. They use us like G.I. Joes in their wars against each other. And Enlil's position was, you're slaves and don't you forget it. And that's why we get the Ten Commandments as being so critical, because it's a slave code. You know, I'm the Lord your God, and you don't go over the fence and work for my brothers or cousins, and so on. And then, as Gardner has pointed out, even that's twisted because inaccurate because in the Ten Commandments are there verbatim, 99.9% verbatim, in stanza 125 of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, I'm sorry, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, from centuries before that.
Uh-huh.
So the whole concept of the dominant god, Enlil, particularly, carrying down and conditioning all of Western culture through the Roman Church, you know, and they were the power-playing bishops as opposed to the heterodox line of servants of the king. And eventually that bloodline became the target of the Inquisition. So, yeah, I mean, as you're pointing out, the whole concept of God being a dominated thing ends up, it ends up like, what's his name, the comic that does that, God. Anyway, it'll come to me.
Yeah.
He died just at the age of 71, just the other day, or just a few weeks ago.
I'm not sure. You know, I've always felt, you know, with, you know, some people say Jesus didn't exist or whatever, but, you know, in Christianity, they talk about how Jesus brought the new covenant, and he brought the new image of this all-loving, all-forgiving God. And, you know, he spoke about God within the individual, and each person can access, you know, God through themselves, and you know, they look what they did to him, basically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we think about that, but that is the whole program right now that we're running as a civilization. We've got all these different groups thinking they're the chosen ones, and they think standing behind them is this warring, wrathful God. And it's been going on throughout history, and there was a warring, wrathful God that did stand behind some of them in the past. But this is a program that's been running over and over and over again, and we just got to somehow break this program.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, start living in harmony with each other, and like you were saying, start cooperating and working together in peace, and just not play out these reoccurring patterns anymore.
Yeah, and that's why I use the word Godspell. You know, the Godspell is that that program.
Mm-hmm.
And the Babel factor is the, you know, when we go back and read the story of Babel in the Old Testament, it was, you know, it still is plural. It was the Anunnaki in in much more clarity and detail in the story of the Babel Tower of Babel story in the Sumerian 2,000 years before it was written down almost like a child story in the Old Testament. You know, they said, we invented them as slaves, but they're getting too precocious, probably through the influence of our genetic component in them, and let's us go down there and confuse their languages and, you know, for good crowd control. That's basically what it was about. And so that's why I used the term Babel factor, you know, the effect of the Godspell program.
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, Neil, we're running out of time.
Oh,
and I know we can go a lot deeper into the subject, so I'll have to get you back on the show again.
Sure thing.
And I can't thank you enough for coming, and it's been a very enlightening evening, and we'll have you back on again soon.
That'd be great.
All right.
Thanks. Good night.
Oh, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Sure.
This is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. I hope you had a great evening. I know I did, and I'm going out to the field to see what's flying and hope we get a little more of these Anunnaki ships on film. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.